FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is May 17th, 2017. Well, gold looks like it's beginning its long-awaited ascent. Too early to tell. Silver's up as well. Stock market down. Is this good, bad, or to be expected? Woody O'Brien, our good friend, abolishfiatslavery.com, is with us now. And if you got any questions, comments, send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Woody, good morning.
Hey, great to be back with you again, Kerry.
Hey.
And on an interesting day, too, we have stocks getting hammered, commodities doing well, and the president of Russia saying the president of the United States is innocent.
Hey, is that the guy you really want speaking up on your behalf? I'm not sure.
Still think that most Americans trust the word of Vladimir Putin more than CNBC or CNN or the three major networks.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this pans out. To me, the most interesting thing about all this Russia stuff is Russia's in NATO. Russia's our ally. They're not invading any other countries. Someone needs to explain to me how they're still evil and we shouldn't be talking to them on a regular basis. And my view is anybody who has nuclear weapons, we ought to talk to every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
about anything they want to talk about.
Absolutely. I mean, They might not be a superpower anymore, but you need to know what's going on there for certain. I mean, this whole thing is really insane.
That's, you know, to me, though, there's a fascinating kind of forest through the trees view that I think people should have about Trump, and that is there's never been a president of the United States whose media was as close to 100% negative as you possibly could be. And When you have this much establishment press, which is really just the pimp of the status quo to tell you how bad this guy is, that must be telling you he's good, because you can tell a lot about a person by the enemies they collect. And I think the press is destroying their own credibility here, basically trying to make Trump out as Satan. He's certainly no saint, but he's certainly no Satan.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot less here than meets the eye, and there's a lot more here than meets the eye. Right.
Well, a lot of it is just propaganda. But, you know, I think the thing that's funny about it is the people who buy into this stuff already voted for Hillary, and the people who voted for Trump I think they look at how he's being attacked and the nitpicking kind of stuff. And they go, yeah, you know what? In the words of James Carville, it's about the economy, stupid. And sadly, I think the Trump bump we got when he first got elected, all these announcements of companies with new jobs, I think that's starting to fade. And all the indicators that I look at tell me that we are headed back into recession. And if you still have money in the stock market, boy, this is a great moment to get out while the getting is good. Because we just reached another all-time high recently. The stock market is so overvalued. If you think it's going to go higher without tax cuts and health care reform, which I don't think Trump can get anymore.
Yeah.
I've got some oceanfront property in Arizona, I want to say.
Yeah, hey, it's looking bleak for sure. And
well, the jobs part is still looking a little bit better. But remember, every person that has a job is lowering corporate profits and potentially lowering stock prices. That's somebody that's got to be paid every single week. So my original prediction is Trump would be good for employment, but he would not be great for the stock market or for the economy overall, because the systemic problems remain. I mean, we're still $20 trillion in debt on the books and over $100 trillion off the books. We still have a currency that is debt-based slavery. You know, the problems Barack Obama changed have changed at all for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing has magically gotten better here, right?
Well, in the beginning, it got better because people felt optimistic. But I think as they watched the gridlock come back in, it's not just gridlock from the left, it's gridlock from the right. I mean, he had a very difficult time with any health care reform because of the people who wanted to say, well, I don't want government involved in health care at all. Unfortunately, that ship has already sailed. And no matter how unconstitutional government provided health care is, people are going to vote based on it because they don't care. They want it. They don't want to be feel like they're out there alone, no matter how much failure is involved. And I always like to tell people, if you think government health care is a good idea, you know, there's $1 billion a week of medical fraud in government programs just in Florida. A week.
A billion?
And you just can't run a system the way it's done. And frankly, even the reforms that Trump proposed, I don't think any of those will work. Because the truth is that 75% of all healthcare costs is behaviorally related.
Of course.
Meaning the decisions the person made ended up in the healthcare outcome. And if you can't get people to make better decisions, you're never going to be able to bend that cost curve. And my plan has always been, if you're going to have a government healthcare system, it has to not cover things your own stupidity causes. You know, if you get leukemia through no fault of your own, you ought to have 100% coverage. But if you fell off a rock wall because you were rock climbing, that's a decision you made. You should be the insurance company for that. Or you ought to have private insurance.
What about pregnancy then? Should pregnancy be covered, Woody? The decision you made?
No, because having a child is a choice. And you have a society where people think they can have a kid and just pass the bills to someone else. And my rule is, if you can't afford to lease an Escalade, do not have a child, because they're very similar cost every month. And the difficulty becomes is when you become the insurance company for the bad decisions that other people make. Any economist will tell you, anything you reward, you get more of. Anything you punish, you get less of. Mm-hmm. And but do I think this will happen? And the answer is, well, probably not, because we're still not a country that can tell people who get free government health care now, you may not smoke, you know, because we won't cover stuff that is a smoking-related illness. We expect you to cooperate by not smoking when we're taking care of your health care bills. We can't even muster the courage to tell grandma to stop smoking.
Well, I mean,
or veterans to stop smoking, or poor people.
This is a perfect illustration of why the government should not be in the healthcare business in the first place, because there's no constituency out there for limiting coverage. There's only constituency for increasing benefits indefinitely into the future. So this is why government should be involved.
Imagine the hissy fit the cigarette lobbyists would have if we ever talked about saying, you know, we're going to punish poor people, veterans, and old people who get free health care who smoke. I mean, their political action committees would be churning out fundraisers as fast as we could imagine. But it's a part of the crony capitalism. Once you let it in the door, you know, as Ross Perot used to say, the devil's in the details. And it's just what, you know, I tell you, the other thing is, too, is having been through a spouse that had cancer in the past year and having had some pretty serious medical expenses myself, you start to realize this lunacy of how one person can pay $25 for medical tests and somebody else or their insurance company can pay $300. And there's no other business in America where you can charge customers for goods or services kind of based on their ability to pay. And there is this lunacy of billing fraud that, unless you can say, well, if you provide service X, this is the price. And you can't charge 500% more to one person and 80% less to another, because it's unfairly discriminatory against everybody. So the system is so screwed up, I think it's going to have to collapse. And Trump has predicted that Obamacare is going to collapse.
It is.
And maybe something better can be built out of the ruins. But at the end of the day, is if you don't have billing reform and universal pricing, and you don't have some means to control costs by saying, if you do something stupid, I mean, something as simple as smoking or drunk driving, you and I shouldn't be the insurance company for people who make those bad decisions. And that's 3/4 of the cost.
What you're talking
the
about.
The behaviorally related stuff. If you can't do anything about that, you're just kidding yourself to think that you're ever going to be able to have a rational system that people will be able to afford. It won't happen.
What you're talking about is assumption of risk. And really, there's so many reasons why the medical system is so costly. It's got to do with over accreditation, unrealistic expectations on the system, and
it's so loaded with cronyism and fraud, it literally can't be saved. I mean, it's like a house that has got black mold in it in so many places. The remediation would cost 10 times the cost to bulldoze it and build a brand new mansion. And you know, I hope that's where we go, because at the end of the day, people who vote are going to say the good is not the enemy of the perfect, and they're going to vote for what they perceive to be good, even if it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have all been conditioned over the course of my lifetime. I'm going to be 58 in 2 weeks to be a very fearful people. And I tell people all the time, you know, I've been around tens of thousands of dogs in my life, and I've never been bitten by one, because I've never let any of them, even some ones that were bigger than me, practically, let them think I was afraid. And that's the way the government operates. We become a people who are afraid of our own shadow, and we're so afraid of dying, we're willing to have communism or socialism with the idea that the government can give us health care and postpone our death by 30 days or 6 months. And we're not adult enough as a country to just kind of say, hey, nobody gets off this rock alive.
Yeah.
And do you want to have a healthcare system that destroys the country, making an 80-year-old an 81-year-old with things that add, you know, years to their life, but not life to their years? I mean, it's a fundamental immaturity when we're all driven by fear, driven by fear of Muslims, driven by fear of doctors fear of our neighbors. This is not a country that became a great country based on everybody being afraid. We became a great country based on people saying, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
Yeah, taking the risk. We were a nation of risk takers. I don't know what we are now, a nation of snowflakes, but look.
Well, you know what? I want to just go on that point for a second, because well, you mentioned snowflakes. There's a lot of information coming out now about this generation that is in their 20s, and their propensity not to marry, not to have children, not to buy houses, and to live in more urban areas. This is going to have a dramatic effect on real estate prices in the next 15 years. It's going to have a dramatic effect on the number of schools and teachers. This generation of snowflakes in their 20s want to live a very different life than what their parents did, especially with regards to real estate, because this is the generation that saw their parents either lose their house or have negative equity of six figures. They are so terrified of real estate and the idea of owning real estate. The rental rates in this generation are going to be 80%. And I'll tell you what, that's not a friendly recipe if you're a suburban homeowner. This generation is not going to buy the houses their parents lived in, and they're not going to buy suburban houses. They predominantly want to live in urban areas. This is an economic earthquake waiting to happen.
Well, it appears that way now. I wouldn't say that the trends tend to change faster than you might think.
I hope it does. I hope it does. But the more of these young people I talk to, the more I think they have an allergy to residential real estate, and they have an allergy to suburban and country living. They almost all the ones that I know here in Eastern West Virginia have all moved to D.C. because they think that's where the action is. That's where the jobs are. That's where the money is.
Yeah, well,
and,
in my early days,
we'll see if they come back.
My early days, I was an urban dweller myself, but I did get wise and eventually bought a house in the burbs, raised a family there. But in any event, what about what's going on here with Trump? I mean, the deep state establishment is hell-bent on evicting him from the White House. Are they going to be successful in this endeavor?
I don't think they are, because in order for them to be successful, they have to get over the will of one person, and that's Donald Trump. And I think that kind of, you know, kid who grew up in Jamaica, Queens, there's a part of me that thinks he actually loves the combat with them. And the more they attack him and the more they beat him up, I think the more determined he is to stick it out, to run for re-election, to win, and to basically just say, you know what? You know, kiss my butt.
Will he accomplish anything, or is he just going to be embattled the whole time?
Oh, I think he'll accomplish some things, but he's definitely going to be embattled. And I think it's one of those, from day one, his press has been terrible. But I think there's an element to why he's embattled. which I don't think everybody understands yet. And that is, the mainstream media was so absolutely positively confident of Hillary's victory. They thought it was impossible that this guy was going to beat her. And his crowds were, you know, just people who watched reality TV and they didn't really vote. They never understood his strength in those Rust Belt states. The Clinton people obviously didn't know the math of how deep they were in trouble. And I think the bitterness that there was not a president with a, you know, lady parts, I think that doubles down the vitriol they have for Trump. They dislike him because they dislike him, but they also dislike him more because, you know, he sent their hero into retirement and so damaged her that I think it's impossible for her to even, well, I guess she could run for New York City mayor. That's, she'd probably win 80% of the vote there.
Yeah, but well, I think
there is a vitriol of him that I only see when I talk to old Redskins fans about Roger Staubach.
Or Yankee Red Sox.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there is a hate there that is, you know, burning like the flames of Hades. And, you know, I think it shows what poor losers liberals are. That, you know, they want to punish the people who hurt them in the past and not just kind of move on and, you know, deal with it. Be a grown-up.
Yeah. Well, that's expecting a lot because, look, it's a narcissistic, overly indulgent group of people. And, you know, they're in denial over reality, whether it's over who won the president or whether it's the economy and the fact that you can't run up debt forever and expect things to work out well, economic cycles, incentives to make people have kids who can't afford them and can't properly care for them, but it's their human right. I mean, the whole liberalistic fantasy that's been built up, this meme.
Well, you know, I think Anne Rand had the perfect line to describe liberalism when she said that you can forever deny reality, but what you can't do is deny the consequences of denying reality.
Yeah.
And every liberal person who I meet lives in this fantasy land where they think of the world as they wish it was and not the world that it is.
Well, or to paraphrase a famous person, I don't remember who it first was who said it, you can have your own opinions, but you can't have your own facts.
Yeah, yeah. Reality is definitely not a perceived state for most people. And the truth is the country is so divided and the margins are so thin. People need to remember, I mean, Donald Trump hit four holes in one in those Rust Belt states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I think the margin in Pennsylvania where I spent most of my life was, you know, 10 or 15,000 votes.
Right.
It was very, very slim. And you could go back through the Clintons' career and say, gosh, I bet you the death of Vince Foster was worth 20,000 votes.
Oh, well, if we start
Pennsylvania, they had spent a career thumbing their nose at the middle of the country. And here was the high-hanging curveball for them to knock her out of the park. And they did. And I think it's just... You know, it's a strange circumstance trying to get someone to see the light of day.
Well, I would just point to the fact that anybody that thinks Trump is just being marched out of there, by all rights, he shouldn't be in the White House now. All right. By any measure, nobody believed it was going to happen except probably you and I and a handful of others, Woody. No one else believed that it was possible. So to think that they can just conjure up this crap and dump him, it shows their state of desperation. Because look, he did two things that take direct aim at the liberals and the deep state. Number one, he set up the Electoral Reform Commission, which all it has to do is take the database of state voters and the database of visa holders and people who are in the country legally and match them up, an instant proof of voter fraud. And the other thing is he fired Comey, which has triggered a panic because look, now all those things that Comey was sitting on are going to come out one way or the other. So they leak a couple of things that he tried to stop the investigation. I mean, I think it's nonsense. I don't think anything is going to come of it, but
But think about this from the context of legitimacy for a second, okay? Mm-hmm. But President Clinton fired the director of the FBI, okay? Nobody questioned his ability to do that. Mm-hmm. Every president since Nixon has banned certain immigrants from the country. Nobody has questioned their ability to do it.
Yeah.
This idea that you can, you know, somehow go to court or filibuster stuff that your own party's presidents have done in the past because you don't see Trump doing anything as legitimate. And if I could just add one thing to that, there are two other people who I think really believe that Donald Trump could win. Well, yeah, I'm going to add a third person too. Ann Coulter, mm-hmm. Roger Stone, and Donald Trump. I think that trifecta there were the greatest believers because they saw the reaction that he was having out in the countryside and just went, you know, the middle America is coming out of the woodwork. And even when they had the thing with Billy Bush, which what a setup that was to mm-hmm. make that inappropriate comment about that reporter, when he survived that, I thought, you know what, people really get this guy. They don't really care what he says. They're only interested in the idea that he can't be bought. Mm-hmm. He was using his own money. And that he's somebody who loves to fight and he'll fight for them. And to me, that's the secret of his success right there.
Exactly. I had a whole list of friends, worry warts. Every day I'd get these, if Trump doesn't win, the country's finished. And I just said, he's going to win. Just stop. And, when election eve came by, sure enough, and for the same reason why he won is the same reason why they won't be able to get rid of him, whether that will neuter him and his effectiveness. I don't know, because there's a lot a president can do without going through Congress. There's one case.
There sure is.
And I want to go.
But let me make a case to you about, I think all this negative stuff for him with the idea to defeat him in re-election is really silly. And here's the reason why. He won by such small margins. Okay, and in 4 years, there's going to be four more years of, you know, 10,000 and 15,000 a day older people dying and going to the boneyard who were his hardcore voters, and there's going to be four more years of kids that were 13 to 17 years old who are now in college and they're new indoctrinated liberal voters, mm-hmm. and to me, he's got a huge demographic problem. That I would say it's 7 or 8 million votes that he's short the next time around. And to me, that's why he has to create 10 or 15 million jobs in 4 years, because every job is a vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the only way that he can overcome this huge demographic challenge of his strongest supporters dying off. And, you know, liberal knuckleheads, you know, coming into their college years and being able to vote. They're the suckers who will buy up all this, you know, hate speech about him. But to me, I think all the stuff they're doing to gin up opposition to him, you know, they ought to be focused on kids that are in high school that are going to be voting for the first time. That's where their winner chicken dinner is at.
Yeah.
For the next time. And Trump's just got to focus on voters because mm-hmm. or on jobs, because jobs is the only way he can defeat the voters he's losing to the funeral director. Simple as that.
Agreed. And he's had a good start. But if there's going to be a recession, there's going to be a recession. There's nothing you can do about it other than tax cuts, which aren't going to get through, evidently, and getting rid of Obamacare and rolling back the regulatory state, right? I mean, what else can you do?
Well, no, I actually think there's something else that Trump can do. I would say there's no billionaire is a bigger fan of gold than Trump. Hmm. And the truth is, you know, Trump has the authority to direct the Treasury at any time to coin up some trillion-dollar coins and pay off the debt mm-hmm. and do what Lincoln did and get us back to some kind of a greenback system of unbacked fiat treasury issued money or some kind of a limited gold currency. I always tell people the thing to remember is if Nixon ended the gold standard with the stroke of a pen, somebody else can bring a different monetary system back with the stroke of a pen. He doesn't need legislation to end the Federal Reserve. He needs to do what Kennedy did. And the question is, does he know he can do that? Is he fearful of doing that for the same kind of consequences that other presidents over history have had to try and change the monetary system? I don't know, but I do know this. The more you try and paint Donald Trump into a corner, the more dangerous he becomes to the establishment on that particular issue, debt and currency, and vanquishing the national debt. I would say the fastest way to end any recession is by executive order monetary reform. Does he know he has that pen in the drawer and is saving it? I don't know. We'll know in the fullness of time.
Yes, we will. We will know in the not too distant future. It's going to unfold. The future is always uncertain, right?
It sure is. But I would tell you what, I think he's going to have a long, hot summer, because my gut instinct is we have now seen the high on the Dow and the S&P 500 and the kind of activity we're seeing today, especially among the banks and financial institutions. Mm-hmm. I think we're on the verge of another banking crisis between now and let's just say Halloween. And it could be really, really ugly. It could happen in a very short period of time. And I expect the words bank bailout to come out of the president's mouth sometime between now and the fall.
You might very well be right here, Woody. We're going to have to see. It's things you need to keep an eye on. Anyway, Woody, where's the best place to find your work?
AbolishFiatSlavery.com is the place to find me, or just look for Woody O'Brien on Facebook. I am the only Woody O'Brien there, but there is a really good Woody O'Brien's Irish pub in Saginaw, Michigan, which I have no ownership or interest in. So if you're in Saginaw, go out and have a green beer there. But if you're looking for me, I'm the Woody O'Brien, the person, on Facebook.
All right. And questions, comments, email me, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. Woody, it's been good catching up. We'll talk to you again soon.
Always great to be with you, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.